For men, women, teens, seniors, knees, low back, neck, shoulders, and plus sizes. New classes start the first week of February. Information at 344-YOGA or on the web at yoga-cu.com.
It's 2:40 Central Time. In sports, a leading researcher into the effects of concussions says football players under the age of 18 should sit out for 3 months after a concussion. Dr. Bennett Omolu is a co-founder of the Brain Injury Research Institute at West Virginia University. He testified today at a congressional hearing on concussions in Houston. He says the brains of children are more likely to be damaged by concussions. He says keeping young athletes out of play for 3 months would lower the risk of irreversible brain damage. There's a light schedule of men's college basketball tonight. Northern Illinois plays a Mid-America Conference game at Kent State, which has won four straight in the conference. The Chicago Bulls and Blackhawks have the night off. The Bulls return to the United Center tomorrow night, hosting the Los Angeles Clippers after a 5-2 road trip. The Blackhawks are back on home ice against St. Louis on Wednesday after winning 5 of 8 away from the United Center. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Provena Medical Group, Risk Management Commodities, Lafayette, and Springfield Electric, Springfield. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
The Illinois Comptroller is the state's chief financial officer, meaning the office oversees the state's checking accounts. When the state is short on cash, the office also hears plenty of complaints from those waiting for payment. Whitney Jones reports both Republican and Democratic candidates are hoping to expand the position's responsibilities.
More eyes have been focused on the comptroller's office since the presiding officer, Dan Hines, refused to sign off on Governor Pat Quinn's short-term borrowing plan. And now Hines is running for governor, leaving the comptroller position open. Three Republicans and three Democrats want to take over. Former Deputy Treasurer Raja Krishnamoorthy says he wants to bring more disclosure and transparency around state contracts. The Hoffman Estates Democrat says he wants to make sure taxpayer dollars are spent wisely as part of his reform agenda.
I believe that one of the things that we need to have, in addition to having these fully searchable contracts, which are not currently available anywhere online, is you need summaries of those contracts. You'd like to have at least the key terms described in those summaries so that you can get a sense of the purpose of the contracts.
Krishnamoorthy adds that he wants to centralize contract opportunities online so that businesses can find out exactly what work is up for grabs in state government. Linwood State Representative David Miller, who's also a dentist, agrees that transparency regarding state contracts is key to accountability. The Democrat says he wants to increase oversight of tax increment financing. TIF districts, as they're known, redirect tax proceeds to aid in economic development, but remain controversial. Miller says the comptroller's office should play a bigger role in this area.
Since TIFs are reported to the comptroller, that's more transparent, to make sure that there's no sweetheart deals involved, to make sure that the impact on the school districts and the local libraries, to make sure that they're at the end of the TIF, that economic growth and development truly did have what the original intent was to try to help bring businesses and jobs to the community.
Wilmette tax attorney Clint Krisloff is also running for the post. The Democrat has been battling the Chicago parking meter lease system. He also founded the Center for Open Government. He says he would bring his watchdog style to Springfield.
The comptroller, on occasion, can and should determine that certain expenditures are or aren't legal. And the comptroller can come to that determination and decide whether they're going to honor that check or not.
Krisloff has been critical of Democratic opponent Raja Krishnamoorthy's role as deputy treasurer in the Bright Start program, which lost millions of college savings investment money. Among the Republicans, Judy Barr DePinka hopes to capitalize on her experience as former treasurer and her time in the General Assembly. The Riverside Republican, who ran unsuccessfully for governor in 2006, says her fiscal know-how of state contract procedures gives her a head start if she's elected comptroller. She says she wants to take posting all state contracts online one step further.
And then you jump to the respective agency, so you get an overview, which I think is very, very important. Then I think you need to review those contracts before they go out so that you know that you're talking about a really a good deliverable product here or a service that you're going to get.
The Republican says as comptroller, she would act as a fiscal role model by pushing to combine the state treasurer and comptroller offices. She says the offices have a lot of overlapping duties, which once consolidated, she says would save a lot of money. There's a catch, though. That merge would require a change to the Constitution requiring both legislative and voter approval. Opponents of the idea argue it would mean less checks and balances on the financial operations of the state. Topinka says she would also have no problem with telling the governor that borrowing more isn't the answer to the state's cash flow problem. Orland Park Village trustee Jim Dodge agrees. The Republican says he wants to be a voice of what he calls fiscal sanity. He wants the office to get rid of the current practice of first come, first serve for payouts.
If you have to prioritize, it makes no sense to me that everybody is treated equally when you've got service providers, let's say social service or medical services, that are 3 and 6 months late on their bills, and other vendors that have non-essential services are getting paid.
Dodge says he will stand up for taxpayers and their money to make sure it's well spent. William Kelly says he wants more transparency, too. The Chicago Republican film and TV producer wants a top-to-bottom review of the state's past budgets. He wants to know who has received state contracts and why. Kelly may be best known in the campaign for a failed attempt at getting arrested. Last December, Kelly tried to remove a Freedom from Religion sign posted in the state capitol rotunda. Kelly was escorted away. The primary election is this Tuesday. I'm Whitney Jones.
Primary election day in Illinois is tomorrow. Polling places are being set up today, and election judges have been going to training sessions for weeks now. Illinois Public Radio's Sam Hudzik attended one in the Chicago suburb of South Holland, and he sends this audio postcard.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How's everybody?
Blessed.
All right.
Carol Ann Harwell works for Cook County Clerk David Orr, who supervises elections in suburban parts of the county. This day, she's at the South Holland Community Center training about 60 polling place workers, some new, some who've been doing it for decades.
Now let's get started. What's the date of the election?
Almost every seat is full for the afternoon training, and the crowd is, as you'd expect, mostly of retirement age. Across suburban Cook, there will be close to 10,000 election judges. Many of them attend three-hour trainings like this. There are no breaks, no snacks. It's a crash course in polling place management.
And it's a gubernatorial primary, right? What does that mean? Where's a primary? What does it mean? Come on, we're on the radio. Show me, act like you know what you're talking about. What's the primary? It means that voters have to declare their party. Is that right?
And Harwell warns them that this step tends to cause problems.
You say to them what? You tell them they have to declare a party? And then they get mad, don't they? And then they start going back and forth. They tell you, I ain't got to declare nothing, don't they? And then you say, yes, you do. And then they say, no, I don't. And the fight is on, right?
Most of the training is spent on all the forms and terms election judges will use tomorrow. You have provisional ballots, federal ballots, universal affidavits, undervotes, overvotes, split precincts. There's a glossary of this stuff in the 116-page election judge manual. And then you have the equipment.
What you're telling them as they're walking up to this machine with their cards is not to pull out the card until it pops out.
These judges will be joined at the polling place by what are called equipment judges, who've received three times as much training. But everyone has to know the basics, so the judges are split into smaller groups for demonstrations.
And it's actually going to print your votes on this paper here.
There is significant confusion here. The switch in recent years to touchscreen voting, some judges say, makes the training more complicated, but Election Day easier with none of those hanging chads. Most praise the training, though Lucy Hojanaki of Chicago Heights says she wishes it was spread out over a couple days.
I think it's okay, but I think it's a little too fast, and it should be a little bit more definite.
Can I move on? Okay, we've got everything set up. It is now 6 a.m. It is time for the first announcement of the day. What is it?
Polls are open.
Huh? Oh, that's so weak. Come on.
Polls are open.
Very good. The polls are now open. For those of you who are new, you may think they're playing, but that's actually what you're supposed to do. You go to the door at 6 a.m. and fling it open with flair and grace and with drama and all the, that you can muster. You yell out into the darkness of the night where no one is standing, and you say, the polls are now open, okay?
At the end of the training, Harwell sternly reminds the judges they have to pass a test before they can get paid. And she doesn't like cheating.
You gotta stop talking. You gotta stop talking. Stop talking.
The two talkers, sitting in the front row, met 30 years ago at the South Suburban Chapter of the Disabled American Veterans.
I'm Stephen J. Sachs.
I'm Donald Kramer.
And they're both longtime election judges.
My wife started me doing it before she passed away, and I've been doing it ever since.
I guess if you guys have been doing it for so long, it's kind of an old hat for you?
Yeah, every time we come to a training session, there's always something that's changed.
See, I can't remember like I used to no more. See, I'm a little older than I used to be.
The judges here will each get $170 payment for the training and election day, plus a bit more if they pick up or drop off supplies. Some say the money's one reason they do it. But there's another reason, according to 78-year-old Lois Clay, who says she's been an election judge for almost a decade.
Sitting at home when you get my age, you don't want to sit home. You go out and you meet. I met a lot of new ladies, and we still keep in contact with each other.
Clay says she gets a little sleepy during the long election shift, 14 hours or more. But she has fun, so tomorrow, like thousands of others, she'll wake up well before dawn to get ready for another day at her polling place. I'm Sam Hudzik.
Tomorrow, Illinois picks the people who will run for governor and U.S. senator later this year. We also choose party nominees for statewide office like comptroller and treasurer and a host of congressional, legislative, and county government seats. Once the votes are cast, AM 580 brings you comprehensive coverage of the count, the reactions, and the analysis from our staff in Illinois Public Radio in Springfield and Chicago. Our coverage starts tomorrow night at 7, live election coverage on Illinois Public Media.
It's 2:52. Jurors in Oregon are set to decide the fate of parents accused of homicide in the death of their teenage son. He died of an illness that his parents never provided him medical treatment for. Instead, they prayed. It's the second faith healing case in Oregon in 7 months, and both cases involve deaths in the same family. Rob Manning of Oregon Public Broadcasting reports.
16-year-old Neil Beagley grew up in a close-knit family. His mother, Marcy, homeschooled him in the morning, and afternoons he'd spend with his dad at construction sites. In the spring of 2008, the family suffered a devastating blow when Neil's 15-month-old niece, Ava Worthington, died of complications from a blood infection. Neil's dad, Jeff Beagley, says Neil seemed physically ill from grief.
Yeah, he seemed to have a stomach ache and stuff a lot from all the stress, and he was upset all the time and trying to deal with her death.
But Neil Beagley was also suffering from an undiagnosed renal disease. It would kill him 3 months after Ava died. Doctors say proper medical treatment could have avoided both deaths. But the family's church, a small insular group called the Followers of Christ, centered in suburban Portland, preaches prayer rather than medicine to treat illness. Neil Beagley's mother, Marcy, says that's what Neil believed, too.
He said he wanted to put his faith in God.
The practices of the Followers of Christ helped push Oregon more than 10 years ago to join a growing number of states where faith healing can't be used to shield parents from prosecution. So as Jeff and Marcy Beagley defend themselves from criminally negligent homicide charges, they're arguing instead that Neil didn't seem that sick. Ava's parents, in the first faith healing case last July, made that argument convincingly, and their trial resulted in only one of them serving a light jail sentence. Last week, Jeff Beagley testified that his son, Neil, appeared to have a bad flu until the night he stopped breathing.
It didn't seem like he was that bad that he would die or anything like that, so it was just a total shock to me. I think I just was just kind of sitting there crying. I don't know what else I did.
During questioning from prosecutor Steve Migrant, Neil's mother, Marcy Beagley, conceded that doctors were virtually foreign to her kids.
Have you ever taken any of your children to a doctor?
A dentist or oral surgeon, eye doctor.
How about a medical doctor that would treat illnesses?
No.
Defense attorneys wanted jurors to focus on the teens' vague symptoms that they argued any reasonable parents might have missed. They said faith healing was not the point. Lead prosecutor Greg Horner told jurors not to ignore the faith issue, as defense attorneys wanted them to.
Of course they don't want you to think about faith healing, because it undercuts their whole position. And from the state's perspective, it explains what is otherwise inexplicable.
But Greg Horner also prosecuted Ava Worthington's parents, and he couldn't get the tougher charges to stick in that trial. Legal experts say the best Horner might hope for is to scare some other church members that they could be arrested if they don't bring their sick kid to a doctor. Prosecutors are hoping for more than that. Greg Horner closed forcefully by arguing that children never die from what killed Neil Beagley, and more broadly, he pleaded for a message to be sent to the followers of Christ with a conviction. As jurors prepared to deliberate Friday afternoon, Marcy Beagley sobbed uncontrollably at the defense table. For NPR News, I'm Rob Manning in Portland, Oregon.
Earth and sky.
The health of our nation is good, better than it has been for decades, but it could be better. And the scientific approach to understanding the causes of disease offers us the hope of real revolutions.
You're listening to Francis Collins, director of the National Institutes of Health. He said the NIH is the largest supporter of biomedical research in the world, with an annual budget of $31 billion. Dr. Collins spoke of NIH priorities for the next 5 years.
The first of those is to apply some of the very new and very exciting high-throughput technologies.
In other words, cutting-edge robotics to conduct millions of lab tests at once and to get a comprehensive understanding of how disease occurs.
We can go from having snapshots about biology and medicine to having really comprehensive views that are going to change the landscape in dramatic ways for cancer, for autism, for diabetes, on down that list.
He also spoke of healthcare reform in the U.S.
We are clearly attempting to re-engineer our healthcare system to result in better outcomes and lower costs, but we need data. And NIH, by running clinical studies to look at what works and what doesn't work, can inform that in really important ways.
He said NIH priorities also include the next generation of medical researchers and global health. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
WILL programs are made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, offering more than 3,000 certified organic products, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar and bulk foods department, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
The forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon in northern and northwestern Illinois: mostly cloudy with some light snow and flurries moving in. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs ranging from 27 north to 37 south. Tonight in northern Illinois and far northern Indiana, periods of light snow with some light accumulations. In central sections tonight, cloudy with periods of snow showers and flurries. In the south, mostly cloudy. Lows ranging from 23 north to 27 south. Tomorrow in northern Illinois and far northern Indiana, cloudy with light snow in the morning, with total accumulations of 1 to 2 inches. In central sections, cloudy with a few flurries. And in the south, mostly cloudy. Highs ranging from 31 north to 40 in the south. In Champaign-Urbana this afternoon, partly sunny, the high 34. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of some light snow showers